Well, hello and welcome to this special Empower episode of Behind the Story. My name's Jackie Smith and I'm the chair of Empower, which is Higginson Strategies' dedicated practice, which campaigns to accelerate female and minority empowerment. And today I'm joined by two wonderful guests to discuss the changing world of work. Hannah Essex is the co-executive director at the British Chambers of Commerce, a job she shares with Claire Walker. And as one of the few executive level job share partnerships in the country, Hannah and Claire are trailblazers in that concept of co-leadership. And we're also joined by Sarah Allen, the founder of Further and More, an innovative recruitment agency which makes job sharing simple for ambitious employees and employers. Sarah is a former civil servant, a political consultant, and now an entrepreneur. So a very warm welcome to you both, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Due to the extraordinary and often quite harrowing events of recent weeks, the lives of billions of people have been altered around the world. And some of those changes will be temporary, but others will remain. It's likely that we'll look back on this time as a moment when much of how our society lives, works, and plays changed forever. Of course, in these unprecedented times, there are many extremely pressing issues which need to be addressed urgently. But we also know that people are thinking about how their lives may change in the long term, and also that in the short term they need some food for thought and hopefully also a bit of entertainment that we'll provide today. So for today's episode, we're going to be looking at how the world of work was changing and will continue to change as we move into the future. Specifically, we'll be thinking about job sharing, which is becoming an increasingly popular way of working. So let's start by tying down what we're actually talking about. So Sarah, first of all, can you just explain what job sharing actually is and how it's different, for example, from part-time working?
Yeah, of course. At its simplest, job sharing is literally two people jointly responsible for delivering a single role. And that is usually perhaps one of them working Monday through Wednesday and the other Wednesday through Friday. But there are lots of other ways of cutting up the working week or month. But the key kind of part of the role is that they jointly deliver. So rather than separating the parts of the role out into different areas, they're both involved in every aspect of it. And the magic of job sharing really is this kind of, is this collaboration and the way in which two people work together to solve problems, to become more resilient, to develop new skills and so forth. And really that magic is what makes it different from working part-time or working flexibly, because aside from working patterns, there is just this kind of much more creative and much more impactful way of delivering a role. So when we talk about it, we very rarely talk about it in the flexible working bucket. Really, it's just another way of delivering a full-time role. And what that really means is that for the people who are job sharing, they work a genuinely part-time week rather than being paid for 3 or 4 days, but still working many more days and being called on their days off. But also for the employers, for their colleagues, their manager, their clients, everybody else gets a full-time service. There's never that kind of moment when someone isn't in the office or isn't available. It's a full-time delivery, but between two people.
Great. Thank you, Sarah. And I think, you know, that point that it isn't the same as other forms of flexible working is really significant and quite often I think gets lost in this. Hannah, you are actually experiencing it yourself in your job share. So in your thinking about your experience, who does it actually benefit? Who actually gains and what do they gain from a job share situation?
I think there's a benefit to the people who are in the partnership, but also the employers themselves. I think it's traditionally seen as something that working mothers do. Certainly that's how Claire and I got into it. She covered my maternity leave and then we started sharing when I came back. So it's seen as a sort of a benefit for mums who want to continue their jobs and their careers in a way that they don't have to compromise. So quite often when people return from maternity leave, they take a compromise on the level they're working at or the scope of their responsibility. But this was a way in which we could continue to hold a senior level role, the whole role, but share it between the two of us. But I think it could benefit anyone at any age or stage, you know, people who want to study part-time, take up a new skill, start a business on the side while still working and earning, people who are reaching towards retirement but want to continue to work in some way, but maybe spend time doing something else, care for grandchildren or elderly parents or something. So it could benefit many more people than it does, because it is still seen as that thing that parents, but particularly mums, do. From an employer's perspective, I mean, Sarah's just mentioned some of the benefits there, but you get two combined experiences, skills, contacts. You can bring that all together into one role and share the benefit of all of that with your organisation. It can help to unlock pools of talent, and so bring people into the workforce who couldn't or don't want to work full time. And that pace and momentum you get from two people. You know, we've done busy communications, public affairs roles where you need that 24/7 cover. And I come in on a Wednesday with fresh legs, you know, fresh brain. Kind of spent time with my children's not always that fresh, but you know, it kind of pick up the pace, pick up the momentum and keep going through the week. And I think for others who do that full time, it can be quite exhausting, but we manage to sort of share the pressure between us, and that benefits our organization as well as benefiting us.
And sometimes this is seen as something, you know, and obviously for us in Empower this is important, it's seen as something that is particularly beneficial to women. Is that right? Can men benefit from it as well? And what happens, what could potentially happen at different stages in your career?
I think it should benefit men as well. If there's one example I can think of, two men sharing, there's a couple of male-female partnerships that we know of. I think the more men who did it, the better it would be, because the more men, if you think about it, it's this, you know, parents, the more men take shared responsibility for both work and home, the better it is for women. So if we saw more dads also job sharing, that would benefit their partners as well. But I don't think it has to exclusively be a female thing in any way at all, but it is a way where women still carry the bulk of responsibility for raising families. Then it is a way that they can also continue in their careers. I think different career stages. I think one thing that's really interesting about job sharing is that, and probably because it's connected to this return from maternity, working mums, is that people don't often progress as job shares. So we moved jobs a couple of years ago, and that was quite unusual to see people move and progress in their careers while being part of a job share. So I also think there's something about recognizing it not just as a way of keeping going and keeping things ticking over, but the ability to progress in a career in that partnership or in another partnership, there's a lot more that can be done around that, I think.
And I think the really important point, as you say, Hannah, is that, you know, quite often when people take on part-time work, that means potentially a step back in terms of their seniority. But with a job share, you can be talking about the most senior job even in an organisation, can't you? That can be. There are some CEOs, I think, that do a job share. So it prevents you from having to sort of go backwards in your career.
Exactly. And that was our motivation. You know, we had children but we didn't want to then take a back seat on our careers, which we'd invested in over, you know, many, many years. So, and I don't think really that there's any job that can't be shared. What I think does happen is that people struggle with the concept of shared leadership, because I think traditional leadership is seen as sort of a single person leading from the front, making all the decisions, calling the shots, whereas shared leadership is a very different way of doing things. I think better, because you get that kind of check and balance on each other's ideas. You between you can bounce each things around and come to a better conclusion as two people than you can as one. And that leadership should be shared anyway. I mean, it shouldn't, you know, I think whether it's with a team or whether it's with a partner in the way that we do. But I think people struggle with that, and they see leadership as kind of a single person. So there's still a long way to go before we see more leadership for job share CEOs and so on becomes mainstream.
That's really interesting, isn't it? That's the challenge, and potentially the positive challenge to the culture of an organisation that you could actually see happening through a job share. Sarah, of course, given all of the benefits that we've talked about, it's hard to understand why there aren't more about. Now, you concentrate particularly in helping to make it more straightforward, both for employees and employers. So can you just give us a sort of feel about what needs to happen in order to make a job share work? I mean, how do you go about setting one up, for example?
Of course. Actually, I'm just going to say I've been nodding vigorously through that entire exchange. I completely agree with all of that. And it would be interesting to come back back to the impact on the career of sharers themselves and what it means for their ability to kind of co-develop, really. So we should park that and come back to it. So in terms of job share partnerships, when I set this project up, I did an enormous amount of research speaking to sharers, successful sharers, but also sharers where they'd had more difficult relationships. And then the people in their ecosystem, I get their managers and their PAs and their colleagues and so forth. And what was really clear was that job sharing, and one of the benefits of job sharing, is that you can bring together two people with an enormous breadth of skills and experience and contacts and relationships, and that those differences are ones that you can harness to the benefit of the sharers themselves and the delivery and the role. But job sharers should really have shared values, and that can mean the way that they want to interact with people around them. It can be things as appearingly simple as timekeeping. So if you've got one person who's always on the edge of their seat, always, you know, getting the brief up on the deadline, and someone else who's incredibly organized, that's where kind of tensions can emerge. So we do a lot of work looking at profiling sharers and trying to find that sweet spot between that spread of skills and experience but shared values. And we also do a lot of work on communication, because people communicate in different ways, of course, and at the heart of a great job share is handing over, is spending time together and sharing not just information about what's happened that week or what might happen, but soft intelligence and insights. And it's really important that communication is very effective. So our approach anyway is to look for that sweet spot, and then we work with job sharers and their employers, and we have a checklist, really. So we work through all the parts of a job share that are just different from delivering a full-time role, from things as seemingly simple as how to manage an inbox and working patterns, through to how to jointly set strategic objectives. And we just help them to figure all that stuff out, because our research showed that when sharers work independently, they tend to take about 9 to 12 months to kind of try one way of doing things, try a different inbox methodology, try handing over on a Wednesday morning. But so if we figure that stuff out before they even start, then they just start being great at their role from day one. So it's a little bit like being a mechanic and getting under the bonnet of just how that job share is going to work.
So, Sarah, do you think people always have to find, do people need to find their own partner in a job share then?
It's a good question. Certainly our advice is, if you're interested in job sharing and you're applying for roles, the best thing you can do is apply as a job share pair. And then to take to that role a very clear explanation of what it is that you're jointly bringing and how your job share is going to function. Because what you want the recruiter to do is to be able to see these benefits that you're setting out in front of them. And that's a much easier conversation to have when you've done that piece of work. But of course, there are examples of people, for example, returning from maternity leave and saying, I used to do this job full time, I want to carry on doing it, but I want to do it as a job share. And then the recruiter needing to go through that process of receiving applications and sifting and interviewing. And in that scenario, our advice is always that the recruiter sifts for competence. So are these applicants able to do this job? But from then on, that the sharer, the future sharer, is part of the process. So they would be on the interview panel. They would go and have coffees with the kind of 5 or 6 people that have been shortlisted, and then have a very strong voice in that kind of decision-making process. As a general rule, if an employer is imposing a job share partnership, it's less likely to be successful, or it's about luck then rather than design.
And it's going to need not only two people who are willing and to job share and share values in the way in which you described, but it's also going to need an employer that is willing to do this, isn't it? And yeah. I mean, you know, the fact that there aren't that many around, and, you know, Hannah, it'd be interesting to see what you think about this, suggests that perhaps employers are a bit frightened about this. I mean, what do we need to do to sort of overcome their fears?
I think lots of people don't know what it is. I think it's the least well known and visible a solution in the kind of talent strategy, I suppose, of part-time and flex and so forth. And so sometimes some of our conversations are about awareness raising, and we will spend time in an organisation just answering questions. Often we'll do some myth busting, because there'll be a question like, well, what if one of them gets pregnant, or what if one of them is ill? And of course the answer to that is, well, actually, what happens if any employee is pregnant or ill or whatever, right? These are just normal everyday concerns. But actually with a job share, what you have is continuity. So if one of the job sharers is off for an extended period of leave or sickness absence, actually what you have is half your week still covered by somebody who knows the role. And so that continuity is actually a benefit. And the answer to that question is kind of quite a helpful pushback. So there's quite a lot of myth busting to be done. We often also see at an organisational level, and especially at a senior level, an appetite for thinking more creatively about how they're going to retain and attract, you know, talented women, right? You're absolutely right that this isn't just about women, but the conversation nearly always starts there. And so at a senior level, we'll see an appetite for that. But actually, in a job share, the manager of that role is absolutely critical. And we have definitely come up against scenarios where you can see that there's an organisational appetite for it, but the manager just isn't up for it. And in that scenario, my advice is nearly always, let's find a different manager or a different role. Because if someone they can make it as difficult as and impossible to deliver the role.
Hannah, I think you and Claire have worked in at least two different places as the job share, haven't you? How have you found your employers? How have you overcome the sort of fears that Sarah was talking about?
Well, we've been very lucky. So we worked for a large organisation of about 600 people, which is where we started. So that's somewhere where I had been in the role for four years before I went on maternity leave. And then Claire did a successful year as my maternity cover. So when we came back, our pitch was about continuity. So having people who'd held the role for a long period of time between them, retaining two people who had been successful in the role, and keeping all that institutional knowledge. And so we were, you know, our manager immediately said, yes, tell us how you're going to make it work. But in principle, we're really happy. So they were very supportive. When we left the organisation, we were the first job sharers there. And there were, I think, at least 9 or 10 partnerships that we left behind, and a kind of a very embedded approach that job sharing was a kind of standard thing that they would discuss with people. So it was, it really changed the culture and the understanding of job sharing within that organisation. And then when we moved to British Chambers of Commerce, our line manager, Adam, our director general, he just immediately got the concept. He saw the benefits. He didn't need to be convinced. Or he needed to be convinced, obviously, that we could actually do the job. So we were starting from a very different place. We did have other conversations with other people where they really got stuck on things around relationships. How can you manage two people who are doing one job? How do you manage your teams when there's two of you? How do you manage your personal relationships? And I think, you know, there's a lot of what Sarah's saying about that shared values, all of that shared values, really good systems and processes, shared inbox, shared calendar. There are all kinds of ways you can overcome this. And if you're set up well, and if you work really hard on that handover piece, then none of those things are an issue. And I think the proof is in the pudding, you know, the fact that we've been successfully doing it. There are people all over Whitehall, you know, in civil services, dozens of hundreds of job shares probably, and, you know, other organisations as well. It can work. There are co-head teachers. You know, if it can work in a school, I'm sure it can work anywhere.
Well, I recently did a talk about our campaign in which I said that there's an interesting piece of work that's been done about whether or not members of parliament could job share. I did say that when that was introduced into parliament, it was about as popular as Guy Fawkes. But, you know, frankly, I don't see, you know, it would be difficult. But I think, as you know, both of you have explained and described today, actually a bit of imagination. And you're solving a whole range of issues, because it's not just good for the individuals. There are a whole sort of lot of work challenges that this is potentially going to help to support, isn't it? Lots of issues it can help us to address. I mean, Sarah, thinking about it, you know, what sort of, how does this fit into our sort of view of what modern work should look like? What sort of issues is it going to help us to overcome?
I think it's really interesting. So we see, obviously, we keep in touch with all of our sharers, and they talk a lot about sort of specifically solving challenging problems within their, you know, things that they need to deliver, and how they have learned to think around challenges together and interrogate them and kind of built up this pattern. But you can also step back and think about what it means to be senior within an organisation. And I suppose I think it's really important to say this is absolutely not just about women, and it's certainly not just about mothers. But if you think about what it's like to be a senior woman in a room of men, or indeed a debating chamber full of men or whatever it is, actually there's something, isn't there, about being part of a team of two and the resilience that you develop by knowing, even if your job share partner isn't in the room with you, they're on your team. And you have an opportunity to think through how you're going to approach a difficult meeting or reflect on a difficult meeting. And I think the thing that sings loudest to me when our sharers talk to us is how much taller they walk as a consequence of being part of that, part of a partnership, in a very meaningful and moving way, actually. And often it could be people that aren't friends outside of work, right? These aren't best buddies who then get to transport their relationship into a sort of enormous piece of real estate in town. These are very specifically work relationships, but they're important and they're empowering work relationships. And I think that's very exciting. I think we need to, you know, as a sort of thinking about the future of work, we need to be much more serious about what a diverse pipeline of talent looks like. The attrition of women from work, from senior roles between their second and third child is about 40%. There are more men called John running FTSE 100s than there are women. I mean, this talent pipeline is absurd. And it's absolutely clear that these other types of working patterns don't resolve that issue in a way that job sharing can. But we also need to think about we've got very clear evidence that employers are struggling to attract great young talent because they want to go and do entrepreneurial work. But actually, you can see that job sharing would allow the combination of entrepreneurialism and employment in a way that rubs off brilliantly against both of them and would allow and kind of resolve some of that recruitment challenge for people sort of sub 30 or whatever. We know that people's mental and physical well-being in retirement is infinitely better when they step down from work gradually. And we also know that when people retire, they walk out of an organisation with enormous amounts of knowledge and insight that could be recycled via a job share partnership in the 5 or 10 years up to that retirement point. So it solves all sorts of problems, from the specific role delivery through to progressive and impactful organisational design, in a way that I really do think no other pattern is going to solve.
That's really fascinating, because our argument at Empower is that actually we need to get women into powerful positions around the table, for example, but that's not enough on its own. We also need to change the culture, change the table, in fact, in order to get the best out of people and the best for employers. Hannah, you I think you had something else to add.
Yeah, I mean, I just vigorously agree with everything Sarah said. I think she's absolutely spot on. But that thing about walking taller, I mean, working with Claire is hands down the best professional development I have ever had. And what I, you know, we learn from each other all of the time, and we give each other very, very honest feedback that no other person has ever given me in a professional context, because we have a very, very trusting relationship. And so that has been enormously beneficial. And I don't think people, I think, you know, it's often seen as sort of getting the job done, not seeing the growth that comes from these partnerships and the confidence that comes from knowing you've got a cheerleader there supporting you, whatever situation you're facing. It's phenomenal. I can't imagine not working in the job share anymore.
I think, you know, notwithstanding what's happening at the moment, we are living in a time when the nature of work is changing. What do you think, I mean, Hannah, first, what do you think is likely to be the working model of the future? What are the things that we need to hold on to? And what role would job share play in helping us to adapt to that new way of working?
It's such a difficult time to have this conversation, isn't it? I mean, I very much felt that until, you know, just a few weeks ago, we were really on the cusp of seeing a different way of working, in many more firms talking about flexible working, many more people thinking, how do I unlock new pools of talent to get them into my organization and to really turbocharge what I'm doing? And we were getting a lot of interest around particularly job sharing and other kinds of ways of working. And that was at a time of high employment and challenges within the economy. We now have huge challenges in the economy, and we're probably going to see increased unemployment, and we don't know how long that's going to go on for. My worry is that as we restart and get back to thinking about recovery once we get beyond this crisis, is that flex work and job sharing will be put to the back of the pile again, because there will be plenty of people available, and firms will be under such pressure that they will kind of go for the most obvious, straightforward route to getting people in through the door. And that is, you know, full-time people who are always present, one person, a more traditional approach. So what I hope is that actually we can have a conversation around, as we start to rebuild, we think about embedding all of the good things that we want to do. So all of the good stuff that was happening, we're making sure that we keep all of that and keep flexible working and job sharing as part of the solution. But I think it's difficult to see that in a way that a few weeks ago I really thought we were on the cusp of, you know, actually really mainstreaming something like this.
Hannah's right, it's going to be a challenge, isn't it, Sarah? What can we do? What will you want to do in order to try and make sure that we don't revert to the old patterns?
Yeah, I wholly agree with everything that Hannah's saying. And actually, sort of, I suppose anecdotally, my sense is that lockdown and working from home is very gendered, and the experience of men and women in this has been, I'm worried actually that it's entrenching some behaviours that maybe we were starting to move away from. And I've heard lots of people say, you know, we've proven that flexible working and remote working is viable, but I'm not sure we really needed that proof. I'm not sure that that's news. And so I'm hopeful that there's some kind of good behaviours to capitalise on. I mean, we talk a lot about how job sharing can allow for flexible organisation design. And there have definitely been examples of job sharing being a strategy for retaining talented staff at the point that headcount became difficult, right? So the offer was, you can go down to a 3-day week and job share your role, or we're going, you know, so you can keep both people, or rather than making one out of two people redundant or whatever. So you can see how it definitely has potential to answer some kind of headcount pressures that we may be looking at. But I echo your thoughts that the knee-jerk reaction is likely to be, or potentially is, returning to the thing that feels simple and obvious, rather than thinking creatively about how to employ people more innovatively, I suppose. You know, our approach is always sharing best practice, sharing great case studies, focusing on benefits for employers and organisation, and making sure we amplify that message. And, you know, opportunities like this are fantastic for sharing those insights. But I think people are feeling very frightened, and perhaps people aren't always able to move into those kind of spaces when they're feeling that way. So I don't know.
This feels like there's going to be a big job for Empower when we come out of this period of time working, I hope, with both you, Sarah, and you, Hannah, to sort of demonstrate to people that you mustn't go back into your old ways of working. We really do need to keep going forward with the enormous opportunities that job sharing can provide, as we've said today, both to employers and to employees. You've been absolutely brilliant in both describing what job sharing is and how it works, and what the benefits will be, and some of the bigger challenges that we're going to see for the workplace. Before I let you go, though, given that we're sort of helping to provide some distraction for people during these difficult times, why don't you tell us and give us one recommendation each for a book or a film or a TV show that we should indulge in over the coming weeks to keep ourselves entertained in between those gaps in working from home? Hannah, you go first.
That's a funny one, because I don't feel like I have additional free time that I had before. I feel like I've got less.
I
slightly diverged from your question in that I really got into podcasts. I'm a commuter before, you know, lockdown, as a commuter, and really got into podcasts. And now that I've started to attempt running again, I'm going back to them. And one I really listened to, obviously, apart from your other one, Jackie, last year, which I got lost in, and I think is quite a distraction from what's going on, was The Missing Crypto Queen. It was really fascinating, and I would highly recommend it as something to just completely take you into a different headspace.
It's completely brilliant and totally bizarre, isn't it? Yeah, no, it's excellent. Sarah, what about you? What's your recommendation?
Well, so The best podcast I've listened to in the last, I don't know how long, is not to be listened to when children are around. So you have to put headphones in. But if you haven't listened to Dear Joan and Jerrica, then I highly recommend it. I'm not going to give you any more information except that it's unbelievably rude and incredibly funny, and pure genius. And last night, on a completely different note, I finished the most beautiful book I think I've ever read, which is called A Fine Balance by Rohinton Mistry, and it's set in the late 70s in India, and it's absolutely exquisite. So from the sublime to the ridiculous, but both fantastic suggestions, and I couldn't recommend them more highly.
Brilliant. And I'm thoroughly enjoying the fact that the iPlayer has got all sorts of programs that are being put on with right from the very beginning all the way through. So I've gone back to Spooks, which I'm enjoying. You can imagine, as a former Home Secretary, I always enjoy a bit of Spooks, and people say to me, is it realistic? And I say, well, in real life, the Home Secretary is less incompetent or evil than they are in Spooks. And unfortunately, the Spooks are probably slightly less good looking. But anyway, it's good entertainment for people. I'm also, I have to say, a bit of a fan of Belgravia. You know, there are some women having a hard time in previous years, but it's great entertainment. Thank you so much to both of you for your enormous knowledge and also the sort of really interesting points that we've been able to raise in this podcast. And to our listeners, never mind those other podcasts that were being recommended, it's this Behind the Story podcast, because I think we've got at least three other episodes of this as well that you need to be listening to. Thank you very much. Thank you to Hannah and Sarah for being so open and well-informed and just generally brilliant. And thank you to those of you who are listening, and to everybody, stay safe in these difficult times. Thank you very much.